on a weekend when Max Verstappen needed to recover many points, as he's had multiple failures so far early in this season to give Charles Leclerc a big points lead. Max Verstappen gets a win in the sprint race and also wins the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix in a Red Bull 1-2 after Charles Leclerc spins out in the race and loses track position while his teammate Carlos Sainz has another nightmare weekend. Welcome to episode 190 of the Grid Talk podcast. My name is Philip Matthew. I'm the host of the Grip Strip podcast. I'm filling in for Ruby Price, who's a little under the weather. We have a group effort here to make this show roll. So they called me in. I was going to be a guest. Now I get to be the host, so I don't have to talk as much. For a lot of people that listen to this show, that's probably a good thing. But either way, we'll deal with that accordingly. With me today, I have a great group to go and carry us through. We have Tom Downey, host and contributor to the Everything F1 podcast.
Hi, Phil.
And Aaron Harper, the host and contributor, Five Red Lights podcast.
How you doing, Phil?
And we have Jawad from the Hit the Apex podcast.
Hey, Phil, you got this, man.
All righty. Thank you for the support. I haven't had anything to drink yet, so I appreciate all the support here. It's a little earlier for me than it is for you guys. Before we get into the race itself, if you enjoy the podcast, we would love it if you take five to leave us a five-star rating on Spotify or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll shout out to you all who do and say thanks. And if you are one of the 74% of people who aren't yet subscribed to the channel, please consider helping us out. The Grid Talk channels, we're on YouTube, we're basically everywhere. Please consider helping us out with a like and subscribe. I'm not prepared to go and read the five-star reviews, but they'll be right here next in a couple of weeks' time, since the Miami Grand Prix will be around. So it'll be more fun. So please listen to the preview of the Miami Grand Prix, since that's going to be a bundle of fun, since they'll be driving around in a parking lot. But speaking of a parking lot with a one groove racetrack, we'll talk about Imola this weekend and the domination that is Max Verstappen, the defending world champion. He came into this weekend. It had a lot of had a lot of vibes of 1994, in that two races in, Senna had no points and he had to come to Imola and do something, qualified on pole and was on his way till what happened. Max Verstappen has won one race and two races, was going to finish second and had fuel issues, engine issues in this place, and he's given up a ton of points. He was over 50 points behind in the world championship. But I'll throw to Tom first. Max Verstappen, with the new sprint rules, gets 8 points yesterday in the sprint. And today, albeit with a little bit of fortune in because of what happened with Charles Leclerc, has now maximized points. He got a maximum points haul this weekend at Imola to now cut into that big points gap as we move towards this next part of the championship with the new race at Miami. We'll have Catalunya and then Monaco. So a big weekend for Max Verstappen, big weekend for Red Bull in general.
Yeah, it was a huge weekend, and it was one that Max and Red Bull both needed. And Max, obviously, to somewhat reignite his championship fight, because he was, you know, even after the sprints yesterday, he was still 40 points behind Leclerc. Max did benefit a bit from, well, obviously benefited a lot from the misfortune of Leclerc, because just gave him that breathing room. But on the flip side, do I really think that Leclerc was going to overtake Max at P1? I don't. He may have gotten past Checo, I don't know, especially when Leclerc forced Checo into an off. But as soon as Max effectively learned the lessons he learned from the launch yesterday, and it was a bit of a case of role reversal, because he got a pretty good start he didn't wheel spin or miss, you know, have gear sink issues or anything. He got away cleanly. He got away just as he needed to do, as did Perez. It was a perfect weekend, and especially given they're in a title fight with Ferrari and Leclerc, to go into an Italian track. I know it's not Monza, but it's still Imola, which has huge significance in F1. For them to go there and snatch this from Ferrari, you know, it all started on Friday when Max put together that lap, and then you know, obviously they didn't get quite a final run at the end of Q3, but then yesterday, you know, Max overtaking Leclerc with what, 2-3 laps to go at the end of the sprint, and then today just sailing off into the sunset. Look, you know, like we said, Leclerc had a bit of misfortune, but this is huge for Red Bull and for Max, and the championship is well and truly on.
And considering how the world championship was last year, and the battle, and how dramatic and how heart-wrenching it became at times, this is where Formula One wants it to be. Charles Leclerc looks ordinary. Max Verstappen looks extraordinary. Like we all know, both of them are at that level, and that's where we're going to be this whole year. It's every point is going to count. There's 23 races, so that's part of the deal. You're going to have to make it count. I mean, right now the points is 27 points for Charles Leclerc as a lead over Max Verstappen going into the Miami Grand Prix. But right behind Max Verstappen is his teammate and the man who finished second, Sergio Perez. Aaron, I mean, a quiet weekend, you know, just typical kind of Sergio Perez kind of laying in the weeds, taking the best of the best that he could get outside of course, you know, getting that win, but you're never going to pass your Red Bull's never going to allow him to pass Max Verstappen. But in this case, he really wasn't going to. He did what he had to do, gain maximum points, help them in the constructors, because obviously in the constructors' situation, it's not been easy for them either. But he's third in the world championship. He's only 5 points behind his teammate, and he's 5 points behind a surprising guy, which we'll talk about here momentarily. But great work by Checo to maximize points for Red Bull here on a weekend that was positive for them after some rough ones to start the year.
Yeah, it was a perfect rear gunner performance from Checo today. He did have the pace, because obviously the Red Bull was probably the standout car around Imola this weekend. But he was never really going to match Verstappen in terms of consistent race pace and ultimate pace as well. He should have qualified higher on Friday, but the sprint obviously offered him up a chance to recover that, and he did. So to put it P3 and then nail the start was really important, because considering what we'd seen yesterday with Leclerc getting ahead at the start, if Leclerc had got ahead at the start today, obviously it would have been a very different story. But it was very important that Perez got between Verstappen and Leclerc. And from then on, Leclerc never really looked like he was going to get past. And despite that one little excursion across the grass, Variante Alta, I never really thought Perez was under that much pressure. Even when Leclerc had him with the DRS, the Red Bull has enough down the straights. And he was just able to extract everything that he needed to. I think if it needed to go to the end on the mediums, Checo's your guy. He makes the tires last longer than pretty much anybody. But he nailed that opportunity to retake the position when Leclerc came out in the from the pit lane ahead of him. So overall, just a very solid performance from Perez, and that is exactly the sort of performance that Red Bull hired him for. And now that he's comfortable within the car and the car is slightly more to his liking in terms of driving style, I wouldn't put it past him to pick up more wins this season. Like you say, if Red Bull allow it, he might need a little bit of fortune, but he's definitely there. He's on the pace. He's already taken a pole position. So that victory this season, or multiple victories, it's there if he wants it.
I think this next race is a perfect example of a place where he could possibly go and sneak through, because it's a new track for everybody. Monaco might be another one too. So it might be a good time for Checo to maybe put himself into the play, possibly, to make his teammates sweat, if they really want to see that. But somebody that has had a interesting start to the year, but has been trending upward, a great podium result, great weekend in general for him, is Lando Norris, getting the podium, albeit 18 seconds behind Sergio Perez, 34 seconds behind the winner. But McLaren, after the first two races of the year, Jawad, were out in the woods, and it didn't look very good for them in regards to their possibilities in this world championship and where they were going to finish, constructors, drivers, whatever. But now, these last couple of races, the McLaren team has recovered. They've looked much faster. They've had better pace on one lap pace. On these wet, dry conditions, it seemed like both drivers were able to compete. And Lando woke up and had a great weekend, and getting a podium, a big deal here for him and the whole McLaren organization as they move on to this next part of the world championship.
Yeah, and it's all come without any significant upgrades yet either. So like you said, you know, the first couple of races, they're out in the woods, but the last two races in Australia and in Imola now, we're starting to see that potential we saw back in Barcelona of the McLaren car. I mean, 18 seconds off the podium or whatever. I mean, a podium's still a podium. And if you had said back in Bahrain whether they'd finish on the podium come round four, then, you know, we'd be laughing. So great result for Lando. He capitalized again in the sprint like we saw last year. So they seem to do, him and his teammates seem to do really well there. And then at the start, you know, he got a good start. He got himself ahead of Leclerc. Leclerc obviously dropped a couple of places behind Perez as well. But, you know, he got ahead temporarily. Then we knew that the Ferrari was quicker pace-wise. So he pretty much had a lonely race and was looking like he was going to pick up a solid fourth until we saw the Ferrari have its little moment towards the end of the race. And then, yeah, to then inherit that podium, second podium for him in 2 years at this venue as well. So good result. And I just feel like it's kind of normal service has resumed at McLaren, where we see these excellent performances from Norris, you know, out driving the car where he can, while his teammates kind of just nowhere, which we'll get to a bit later, I'm sure. But, you know, this is the potential that we saw from Norris last year. And, I mean, you would think that they're only going to get better as the season goes on. The more that they learn about these cars, the more upgrades that they can bring. So I'm sure it won't be until Barcelona now where we'll get all the teams bringing significant upgrades, and McLaren definitely in a position where they can develop a lot quicker and, you know, smarter than other teams in the midfield, let's say, for example. But yeah, just, you know, seeing him up on the podium was a happy result for any McLaren fan, and I'm sure for the team as well, who have had to cop a lot of criticism and, you know, just the first couple of rounds where it was very difficult for them to be able to get this result is a real boost for everyone, I'm sure, back at the factory.
Yeah, I think it's a boost in general for the whole McLaren effort, and that's not just in Milton Keynes, but here in the States, considering how the IndyCar program hasn't exactly had the greatest start to the year either. So it'll be positive energy going into that. They'll have a busy weekend. They'll be at Barber for the IndyCars next week, and then, of course, Miami for the following week. So it'll be a lot of stuff going on. Pato Award, we'll probably see a Pato Award appearance at the Miami race as well. Woking, sorry, Red Bulls. It's my fault, Tom. I'm mixing up all my towns. I'm getting bad with that, so I apologize. I apologize for that right there. Be with the dying pygmies in New Guinea, amen. With that, we'll go to somebody who's another British driver. I'm not going to tell you where he's from because I obviously don't know where the teams are. Somebody who's pulling stuff out of you know where to make the most out of a situation, which is not exactly the prettiest for Mercedes, is George Russell. George Russell finishing fourth, of course, you know, with the fortune that we're going to talk about in regards to what happened to the points leader. But George Russell this year, I mean, I think the Bahrain race was a little bit rough for him. But ever since then, George Russell, I think, has been better than the seven-time world champion, the 103-win legend that is Lewis Hamilton. I think he has been the better driver at Mercedes. And I say that, of course, as a fan of a certain driver. But George Russell has proven to be very capable, Tom. And to get the great start that he did today, which was something that he never was really known for when he drove at Williams, to be able to battle and keep a car that generally is not that good in a position to get a top five finish and get a fourth place is a big deal. And he's fourth in the world championship. I mean, he's fourth in the world championship. He's only 10 points out of second. And that's after Max Verstappen scored 34 points today. So, I mean, George Russell is doing great work considering the circumstances that Mercedes have right now, which is not pretty, not even making it out of Q2 in qualifying on Friday, and generally not making much of the sprint either.
Yeah. George Russell has been, I don't want to say the surprise of the season, but given his relative performance to his teammate, and let's not forget who his teammate is, and given the relative performance of that car, to be in the points and to be in the top five every single race so far, and to do it largely on merit, yes, he's had a bit of helping from others' misfortune. You know, Bahrain, he benefited from a couple of places, but he was still more or less there. And today, you know, he was running the P5th more or less on merit, then got P4 thanks to Leclerc's misfortune. He did a great job of holding off Bottas, who, I can't lie, I wanted to see Bottas pass him. I wanted to see, you know, Bottas go past and give him the middle fingers, you know, to sort of reminisce from last year, show him how to pass properly into turn one. But Russell has been really good. So, you know, he's again, he had a good day today. You know, he like you said, Phil, he made a good start. Something he wasn't really known for in the Williams, whether that was him, whether it was a combination of him and the Williams, I don't know. It doesn't really matter anymore. But he got off the line pretty well, given he was out in Q2 again. If you'd have told us last year that George Russell is out, both Mercs are out in Q2 and that they're battling with Haas on merit for position, and it's for sort of P6, P7, P5, whatever. You know, if you'd have told us that last year, people would have fallen off their chairs laughing. In some ways, it's a shame. I mean, I'm perfectly honest, I don't think it's a shame because Mercedes has been at the top since 2014. And we've seen just how far ahead of the pack they've been sometimes. The rule change has slapped them a bit. And you can see when that car goes down the straight just how badly it's porpoising. You know, it looks like Russell's going to come out with a migraine or something because it looks like his head is getting rattled around inside that helmet. But he's doing an outstanding job with the car he's got, you know, with the car underneath him. And he's not slagging off his team.
Yeah, I think that's something we'll talk about in a little bit in regards to that particular driver. It's been a while for him to have to deal with a bad car. And I think they've tried to keep it in-house and they're trying to do what they have to do. But George Russell is like, well, I'm in a big team. I know I'm going to be the guy eventually. And he's just keeping his head down. And he's like, well, I've driven bad cars my whole career in Formula One. So now I'm just in another bad car, just as a cooler paint scheme. That's literally what it is. And it's a bigger team. But he knows he's the future leader. He's not a big talker. So he's going to kind of quietly go about his business. And in turn, I think it will endear him to the Mercedes group and all the guys he gets to work with and men and women he gets to work with. Because I think over time, over this season, they will make changes. They will improve, I would assume. How can you not when you're as big as they are? But I think George Russell's only going to get better from this, which considering what they're dealing with and he's able to do this, who knows what that really could mean as we get into the summer months. But great performance from George, consolidating the Mercedes constructors situation as well. Tom brought him up there, Aaron. Porridge, Valtteri Bottas, version 96.4, I think I said. This version, I think, is working really well. He's enjoying his time as a team leader at Alpha Sauber. The car is good. Power unit's good. He's been qualifying really well. And he's racing as good as he has in a few years. Gets a top five finish and a big haul of points while his teammate struggled. So big deal for Valtteri Bottas. I'm sure he wanted to go and pass George Russell as Tom did and flip him off. But instead he went and kept cooler heads prevailed and he consolidated his points haul got some good points for Alfa Romeo as they're battling right now with the likes of Haas, with the likes of Alpine and some of these other teams in the midfield there. So great work by Porridge for top five.
Yeah, however, this version of Bottas is wired. It seems to be working very nicely. He's settled into that team leadership role, which you'd expect he'd be ready for, given that he's now into his 30s. So, and he's spent a lot of time at a top team like Mercedes. But it seems to have given him a new lease of life. It's kind of how we all imagined Vettel going to Aston Martin would have been last year, but it didn't quite transpire like that. So for Bottas to be putting in these performances, we shouldn't be shocked by it. The thing that we should be surprised about is the fact that the Sauber is quite as good as it is. But if you give a driver of Bottas's caliber a half decent car, like he proved when he was at Williams, he can deliver. So yeah, he would have been very pleased with that performance. Obviously, I think there was a bit more of a personal agenda with him trying to overtake Russell. But like you say, he's a cool head. He's from Finland. It's fairly cold there. So I think he wanted to go for that move, but he made sure he brought home those points. And there was a point where the team radio for Bottas popped up, and I just thought we were going to hear another rendition of "Don't Make Any Mistakes" that caused Checo Perez to throw away a win. But it was a quiet race, but we actually saw Bottas overtake someone at some point this weekend, which was an improvement on last year. So more good points for Alfa Romeo and Bottas, considering that the teammate didn't score any points at all. So, yeah, they can just continue their upward trajectory and keep building what is a very nice and tidy season so far.
Yeah, and just looking at it, as I mentioned, they're in a battle with Alpine, AlphaTauri, and Haas. It's a 10-point gap between the Alfa Romeo team and Haas from 5th to 8th. So the top two are in their own world. Mercedes is in their own space, and McLaren's in their own space in 3rd and 4th. So right now, the real battle is amongst those four teams. And then the back two teams are in their own battle, which became one now because of what we're going to talk about here in a few moments' time. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about the top of the constructors and the top of the world championship. And that's the world championship leader, Charles Leclerc, or Charles Eclair, or however many different ways they pronounce it, because I was going to get into a Paul de Resta pronunciation of Valtteri Bottas' teammate, but I don't want to be that guy. He should just stick to driving, or just being the analyst that they go to once every like half an hour or whatever on the side. But Charles Leclerc there, Jawad, he didn't get the chance to make the lap that he wanted to in qualifying, and ended up qualifying where he did. He made the start yesterday, but wasn't able to hold Verstappen off. In this case today, he wasn't able to make the start to get past him. Was up there, gave the battle that they've had all year, continued. But the first chinks in the armor came out for Charles Leclerc. Obviously, the track conditions probably assisted in that, trying to push, trying to make the most out of his situation. But Charles Leclerc giving up points, those are points you don't really want to be giving up when it comes to how close this world championship was a year ago. He's had a great start to the year. I know he wanted more out of this weekend being a theoretical home race, but for Charles Leclerc, sixth place finish here at Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix is not what I think he was looking for by any stretch of the imagination.
Chucky boy. I guess regardless of whether it's a home race for Ferrari and whatever pressure that entails on them, I guess we've got to remember that this is a marathon, not a sprint. And, you know, having that big lead in the championship now, not quite cut in half, but, you know, a chunk taken out thanks to the sprint points, the extra points they get from there. And yeah, chinks starting to show in the armor. Like when that happened, it was just, you know, moment where you put your head in your hands and say, are we looking at, you know, a Sebastian Vettel type capitulation potentially happening? You know, Ferrari, it's so hard to trust Ferrari when it comes to a championship. I mean, this is just after, you know, watching them fall over themselves for many years now since, you know, they last won back in 07. And, you know, their car could be bulletproof. It can be amazing in, you know, 75% of the tracks we go to, and then there will be a couple of tracks that they struggle. But he just needed to realize, okay, this is not my weekend. It's not my race. Let's just cut our losses and get the trophy in third. It's still a good amount of points. I'm going to be still leading the championship with a healthy lead rather than taking the risks, potentially damaging the car, you know, the power unit as well gets thrown into the equation. And it could have been much worse. You know, he's lucky that incident at Variante Alta, he only brushed the wall. They just changed the front wing and he was on his way again, clawed back some positions to finish sixth, which was good. But if it ended up being a terminal problem, that's 0 points for him. And that could have been much worse. So that's where, you know, I guess we talked about Leclerc's maturity and, you know, how great he was in the opening races, that, you know, he doesn't have that erratic style that he did perhaps in 2019 when he won his first couple of races. But I guess it gets thrown out the window when you look at that performance, because it just seemed like he was desperate to, you know, whether to get the fastest lap point or to get that half chance on Perez to finish second. And you can't really show that when you're going to be fighting for a world championship, and especially on a weekend when, you know, Red Bull pretty much took all the points that were on offer. You know, they got the fastest lap, fastest in the sprint, and then winning the race too. You know, Verstappen is just going to hoover up those points like we saw last year. So the onus is on Leclerc not to make those mistakes. And the mistake we saw this weekend, I mean, it was pretty bad. And, you know, for their sake, they better not do that sort of thing again, or he better be a lot more composed about it, because, like you say, if the points get away from him, you know, when we get into the crucial part of the season later, then, you know, he can't rely on the other team tripping over themselves, because, you know, they've lost points, which, you know, they could have easily had by finishing third.
Yeah, that's something that we're going to have to look at as we go on in the season. And it's something that we have to look at in regards to that we have to see with Charles Leclerc, because he's never been in this position. It's one thing when you talk about Lewis Hamilton. It's one thing when you talk about now Max Verstappen, who have had these battles, and some of the other drivers throughout the grid that have had it. But when it comes to Charles Leclerc, this can't be a regular occurrence. You can't give up that many points. You can't have those kind of performances, because Red Bull always, they're smelling blood and they're always going for it. And when there's any level of weakness, they're going to pounce on it. Then they're going to go and talk about how they're not the best or something. They'll come up with some BS that they'll say on TV, but in the end they are. And they are the defending world driver champions, and they were there with a chance to win the constructors as well. So it's something we will look at as we go on through the rest of this season. Miami, of course, the next race. I'm going to go and combine here. Tom, I'm going to go with Yuki Tsunoda getting some points here this weekend. It seems rare. So he was only 5 seconds off of Charles Leclerc. He had a gap on the person he finished behind. It's usually the other way around. Pierre Gasly's the one in the points, and Yuki Tsunoda's out. But it is a race that's a track that Yuki Tsunoda has more experience at than others. Of course, it's his second year in Formula One. But solid run for him, a nondescript kind of weekend for Pierre Gasly. Unfortunately, he can't carry the team every week, so I guess they just swapped roles here this weekend at AlphaTauri in their battle in the midfield.
Yeah, it was a really good weekend for Tsunoda. A good Sunday, Friday, let's not go there. But Saturday he made a few places. But then today he did really well, you know, because he started P16, I think he started. It was P15, P16, I think. He was towards the back, I know that, because they both went out in Q1 on Friday. Tsunoda to actually get up into the points, it was a really, really, really good day for him. You know, like you said, Phil, Gasly always used to carry that team, and I was pretty critical of Tsunoda last year. Yes, he has a bit more experience at Imola, but he still had to, he still had to put the performance in. And they say that rain is a great sort of equalizer in F1. Tsunoda drove a really mature race today. He put in some great defensive moves. I can't remember for the life of me who won. I think it was Vettel. It might have been Vettel when there was someone trying to overtake him. I can't remember who it was now, because I was sitting there thinking, wow, Tsunoda's actually keeping him out and he's not put it in the wall, which he did last year. The same wall that Leclerc put it in. He picked up some good points. He really worked his way up the grid. It was quite funny when he got past, I can't remember who he got past towards the end. Possibly Magnussen, I'm not entirely sure. His engineer came on the radio, and at first I thought, oh, Yuki shouting at me then, but no, Yuki was actually celebrating quite loudly, and I thought that was quite funny. He's a bit of a, I was going to say darling of F1, that's not quite right. I was going to say baby of F1, that's not quite right. But he's like the sort of like little lovable guy in F1 that is sort of like funny in his own quirky, come sort of like unintentional way. I do like Sunoda, and he is coming good. Today proved that. He looks a lot more mature. He looks a lot more composed. He looked a lot more relaxed in the car. He's putting in some great defensive moves. He just looked like someone who was really beginning to get to grips with the car. I mean, yes, you know, he knows him a bit more. You know, this is the track, I think, where he did his first test for AlphaTauri back at the tail end of 2020. He's raced here in his junior career and all the rest of it, but he is doing well now. Comprehensively outscored Gasly. Well, you know, he scored points. Gasly didn't. End of. He qualified better than Gasly. What more can you say? You know, he had a really good weekend. Well, really good Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, he went from 16th to 12th in the sprint, went from 12th to 8th in the race. So was progression, upward progression after a nightmare qualifying session. Gasly's weekend was nowhere, unfortunately. But when you consider what Gasly means to the team more times than not, I guess one week throwaway, but we will see. The reality, though, is in the discussion we're having with the midfield, every point is going to count between 5th and 8th. And we're getting into a lot of these drivers here. So when only one of the cars scores, it's going to put more of a focus on who didn't. Another one that we have to go and look at in regards to point scoring, and it's Aston Martin, Stroll F1. I don't know how many different names you can come up with that team. But Aaron, Sebastian Vettel has had quite an interesting start to his 2022 season, through COVID, through crashes and engine problems. But this weekend, we kind of saw the glimpses of what made him a four-time world champion and over 50 Grand Prix wins, carrying a car that probably is an anchor into the points. And his teammate even showed up too. So 8th and 10th for Aston Martin. They got 5 points that puts some ahead of Williams. So now they're not on the bottom of the table in regards to the constructors. Big weekend for them. Sebastian Vettel, big weekend for him as well, to make finally get a little bit of momentum in for his season after what has been a brutal, brutal start of the year based on the car, based on everything going on over there at Aston Martin.
Yeah, there's been a lot of negativity surrounding that team this season for one reason or another, not because they're a bad team or bad people, just things haven't been quite going their way. And Australia was pretty wretched. I think between Seb and Lance that they crashed the car 4 or 5 times, which is, that is unheard of. I mean, that's Mazepin levels of destruction. So for them to have just a clean weekend, to be honest, and we hardly saw Sebastian on the TV feed, which is kind of nice, not because I dislike the guy, but it just shows that there's nothing going on that means that they should be on, like, shown on the screen. And we saw a little bit of battling with Lance and Sonoda, but for Seb, he just needed to get mileage. And the sprint weekend actually probably helped him with that, because he would have gone straight into qualifying and needed to perform in the car, and obviously wet, so equalizing the conditions a bit, and he outperformed what that car probably should be capable of. Struggled a bit in the sprint, but then you take that information into the race, and again, it's just extra learning for him because he just hadn't had the time in the car, and that showed in Australia. So a much smoother, much more accomplished weekend for Seb and for the team as a whole. And they picked up some points. So, you know, just even if they hadn't picked up any points, it would have been valuable information. But the fact that they've picked up 5 points is, you know, very good reward for them. And considering that the car hasn't been very drivable in the first 3 races, it looked a lot better this weekend. It porpoised a lot less, and they seemed a lot closer to the midfield pace. So maybe that midfield is about to grow in terms of competitive nature.
Yeah, they have a little bit of ground to make up in regards to that, but I wouldn't be surprised based on the amount of funding, based on the amount of things going on there, the Silverstone team, that they'll be able to go and move up over time. The team that they're immediately behind is the Haas team right now, and Kevin Magnussen, another points finish, a solid weekend, was qualified, practiced very well on Friday. Qualifying pace was great. This version of Kevin Magnussen is definitely the one that I think most, a lot of people was thinking was going to be in Formula One many years ago. And we have him now. So Haas is the beneficiary of that. More points, two points for them, considering where they were the last couple of years, last few years, up and out in the back. To be able to score points and have pace is a good thing for the series, for us here in the United States to see the Haas team actually being relevant is nice, and Kevin Magnussen doing a great job after he spent time in IMSA last year is cool, even did an IndyCar race. But great job by him, Jawad, to get more points to keep them up there in that midfield battle. On the flip side, his teammate Mick Schumacher spun out twice, struggled this weekend. Not one of his best performances, I would say, of his career. And probably looking for more out of Mick Schumacher here as the season goes on. They need him to score points. At the end of the day, as you mentioned earlier, when you have such a close battle and every position is money, in the end of the year, every point is going to make a difference, and it matters even up top, but really here. And you need both drivers scoring. And Mick just really was not in his best form while his teammate was able to consolidate things for the team.
Yeah, it was a great weekend for Magnussen again. And like you said about him, this version of him that we're seeing this year is something that, you know, we would have wanted to see years ago when he made his debut for McLaren, and then that year that he had with Renault when they came back in 2016. But yeah, no, it's good. It's more of a, I don't want to say mature, but, you know, it's more composed. We're seeing the hard racer. We're seeing the Viking, which is what a lot of people love about him. It's, you know, so much nicer to see him in the car than, you know, what's his face last year, for example. But solid performance from him this weekend. Even in the race, he made a good start from eighth. He was as high as fifth, battled with George Russell a little bit, but eventually got overtaken by the Mercedes, and still finishing in the points is a good result for Kevin. Mick, though, it was a little bit disappointing. He started the race in 10th, and, you know, given the changeable conditions and whatnot, there was that thought beforehand. I thought, you know, possibly this could be the first race we see him score points. It's an eventuality. It's going to happen at some point this year. But like you say, Phil, he's got to really be there to contribute as well, because, you know, it's not like Haas are going to be chasing themselves at the back of the Constructors' Championship this year. They're actually in the thick of the battle with teams like Alpine, AlphaTauri, Aston Martin and all that. So they're going to need the second driver to be picking up the pieces as well, scoring the points where they can. But, yeah, just a bit of a mistake-laden race for Mick. So hopefully, you know, he can learn from this and, you know, be a bit more attentive in future races when the conditions are like this. And it's going to be tough next time out, you know, at a new track in Miami as well. Another race of attrition I'm expecting. So, yeah, the possibility is going to be there every race for them to be able to score points. So they're just going to have to capitalize when they can. And it's good to see that Magnussen can do that in this car. So, yeah, really good for those guys.
Yeah, and it's with the eventuality of all the upgrades, I figure, that will be coming, as we've discussed earlier, here in Spain in a few weeks' time. we have to, every point you can get right now is key towards what might end up happening later on in the season. Some of these teams that have really been on the back foot may be able to make a charge or make a progression, while some of these teams that have started out very hot may start moving back. So these points right now are key. So Miami is going to be that last race before that. And you consider it's a quote street circuit. It won't be anywhere near as tight or ridiculous as the Saudi track, but it'll, and maybe Baku in certain areas, it'll actually be a little more open. So hopefully it won't lead to as many horrible incidents. Nobody wants to see that, and hopefully be a cleaner race. But, you know, it is a street circuit, so, you know, there's liable for full safety cars and the whole bit there. Tom, I'm going to throw to you because you always have great takes on certain drivers. Alexander Albon finished 11th, just outside the points, trying to get that second point for Williams. He's been solid, yet unspectacular, kind of like Alex Albon is. I read that he's dating some LPGA Tour golfer, so he's very happy in his personal life. He's happy to be back in Formula One. And he's doing what he can with what theoretically might be the worst car on the grid, or one of the worst cars on the grid, finishing 11th, while his teammate does what he usually does, which is be nondescript and not do anything of great significance. So I'll let you talk about the Williams team here, Tom, before we move on to the next person. That's probably a full group discussion.
I'm actually a bit full of praise for Albon today. I just see the look of shock in Phil's eyes there. P11 in a Williams, where only two cars are tired, good going. That is really good going, especially given his teammate was only above Mick Schumacher and Daniel Ricciardo. I'm looking at it here. And the only reason he's ahead of those two is because Ricciardo had to pit for a new nose on the first lap, and Mick Schumacher copied his old teammate and spun it around like Britney Spears. Albon, well done. I heard that Williams have actually put less paint on the car, and they've removed some stickers to make it lighter. It goes to show the fine details that they go to in F1. It's literally grams like that. I thought Albon in the Williams actually looked a lot more competitive. I don't know if they brought any upgrades or not. I don't really care, because to be fair, it's Williams and it's just, yeah, cool. They're sort of just there. They sort of like exist. Me ribbing aside, seeing Albon almost in the points, but right up there in the mix. And look at some of the names he's ahead of as well. Let's not forget that. In what is, let's be fair, the worst or second worst car on the grid, because it's either them or the Astons. But both Astons scored points this weekend. So, I don't know, take your pick. Albon did well. He was having some good ding-dongs. Didn't see an awful lot of it, but he was always there. You know, he was always right up with them. It's not like he was sort of just trailing round at the back and sort of just driving his own race. He was looking to get moves. He's looking to get, you know, he's putting a look in on Stroll several times. I'd have liked to have seen him score points. Unfortunately, he didn't. But to come from P18 on the grid up to P11 in that Williams is good going. He almost like Hamilton, for God's sake, in a Williams. And I know the Mercedes isn't that good this year, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Hamilton's not just going to go, but of course, sir, please come through. You know, he's going to make it difficult for him. He got past Gasly. You know, we saw what Gasly was like when he was defending against Hamilton. So, and we saw Albon holding off Gasly for a bit as well. Yeah, I thought he had a really, really good race. Can I go in on Latifi?
That was the reason why I wanted you to talk about Williams. So
there okay, you go. Right. So I can talk about all of them. All right. Oh, Nicholas, where do we begin? You're just like furniture, aren't you? You're just there in the way. You know, you just. I've tried to give Latifi the benefit of the doubt, but he's just. You know, as Dan Tictum said, Scooby Dooby Doo, Latifi is poo. I think he had a point. You know, he was never spectacular in F2. Yeah, he was decent, but he was there quite a while. That's never normally a good sign of what's to come in F1. If his teammate is able to do that with the car, then he should be able to, the TV should be able to do better. He should at the very least be fighting with the likes of Guan Yu Zhou. But I looked at the timing charts. He was nowhere. He was absolutely nowhere. Just trundling around on his own. I mean, we didn't see an awful lot of him on coverage because why would you want to? Let's be fair. He's a nice guy. Don't get me wrong. You know, he brings what, $30 million, I think, or rubles or whatever to the team. But William said they don't need Latifi for his money anymore. And if they really want to be competitive, especially in a cost cap era, they really have to question or look at who's going to be alongside Albon next year. Because they cannot go on with just one driver who is potentially able to get points. Because when the opportunity presents itself, they need two drivers who are going to be able to go and say, yeah, I'm going to take points. I'm going to grab this. I'm going to grab that, all the rest of it. Look at Albon last week. You know, yes, there was a bit of a strategy masterclass in that, but he legit held out for points. He almost had points today. You know, the Williams is not as inherently bad as a car as he makes it seem. But we're just not seeing any improvement from him. He's not getting quicker. He's not getting better in quali. Could I do a better job? Obviously not. Look at me. I wouldn't even fit in an F1 car. And if I did, you'd have to get a fire crew to get me out. But you know, F1 has such a place in motor racing and such a place just in sport in general. It's like there are so many different levels of motorsport. But you say to someone, tell me your motorsport series, they'll go Formula One. And then after that, they'll probably go Le Mans, or they'll say MotoGP or NASCAR. My point is, he is racing in the pinnacle, the creme de la creme of single-seaters. And he's been here for 3 years, and this is his third season. And he is still at the back of the grid. I know Williams are not going to be at the front. I know they've not done a Haas this year. They're not helped by the Mercedes power unit, which is something I never thought I'd say in the turbo hybrid era. But when Albon has got points in only his third race back in F1 after a year out, and is one position off points today, and was still fairly close to getting Stroll, and the Latifi is the only reason he's ahead of two drivers is because they've spun or has to crash and had to pit, it's not good enough. And his days are numbered.
That's exactly what I wanted. So I thank you for that, Tom. I figure, you know, I don't have the energy to go into Nicholas Latifi. I don't even do it on my own show because he's that irrelevant. But he is basically, since Egghead is gone, theoretically with his buddy from Canada in the Aston Martin, probably the worst driver on the grid. And when you've been 3 years and your teammate has routinely beaten you to a pulp like George Russell did for 2 years, and we see where he is now, and now Alexander Albon coming back from driving touring cars and occasionally doing sim work and then doing an occasional test here and there, but driving GT3 cars and in his third race back, getting a point, and in his fourth race, having a chance in a battle, which probably is going to be worth, you know, $10, $20, $30 million, whatever it is in real talk. And you have the likes of Logan Sargeant, per my personal bias aside, and other people in the Williams fold, you know, Jamie Chadwick, who may never get a legitimate opportunity, who knows, but at some point, yeah, you have to consider that, and especially how tight things are in Formula One. But I think this next one, I kind of want to do this as a group one, because it is somebody who is as big as he is. Sir Lewis Hamilton finished 13th, a lap down, and was generally irrelevant the entire weekend. It gave me vibes of 2009. He made mention of 2009 when McLaren completely biffed the new rules regulations and their car was so bad it couldn't get out of Q1. Well, they couldn't get out of Q2, albeit there was multiple accidents and nonsense that went on, but they weren't going to get there. Lewis had no pace. He couldn't make any moves. I kind of combined that with Yuki Tsunoda, but we'll get to him in a minute. It's okay. It's Pierre Gasly. He can wait. The fact is, Lewis Hamilton didn't really move up all weekend, and he was not a happy boy. People get pleasure in listening to him whine on the radio. I would say that there's certain other people that are up there that they play their radio and they whine to, and nobody says anything about that or really doesn't make as many big deal about it, but it is what it is. It's not good times. I mean, and here's another thing, and as we mentioned earlier, George Russell looks all right. I mean, granted, the car is a piece of crap, but the fact is, George Russell seems okay. And he's not, like, this is a thing where they got George Russell for this reason. Not, I don't think they believed the Mercedes was going to go and make a turd on wheels, but they did. And they're like, well, if we have Valtteri Bottas, he's going to be out driving Formula 2. And then if we have Lewis Hamilton, he's going to be compromised. Well, we have a guy that's literally drove a brick for 2 years in F1. He'll be fine. And he has been. But Lewis Hamilton, I tell you, there have been great world champions that have had unceremonious ends to their career. That's kind of in Dewey. My thing is, I guess I'm putting this to the panel. First, I'll go with Aaron, Jawad, Tom. Is this a possibility where 2009 with McLaren, they're able to make the upgrades, Lewis will get back to being what Lewis has been basically his entire career? Or is it too early to really say that this is the beginning of the end of Lewis Hamilton as we know it, as the great? I mean, he's still a great champion, one of the greatest ever. That's not going away. But is this the start of where we see the downturn of Lewis Hamilton in Formula One after what has been this and Saudi were two of the worst performances I've seen Lewis Hamilton put in his entire career. And I've been watching him since, you know, GP2. So it's all to see this is, it's mind numbing in certain ways, but it's sad in other ways, and it provides pleasure to many people too. But I'm going to put it out to you guys. What are your thoughts on this weekend and what Lewis, the whole thing about Lewis and Mercedes and their whole deal?
I think it's too early to speculate about whether Lewis will retire or if this is his power's on the way, and I think he's as good as he's ever been. Just his equipment is substandard. Regarding the possibility of it being a 2009 McLaren sort of vibe, there's a possibility. The Mercedes isn't, I don't think it's as slow as that McLaren was. It's just very patchy in the way it's set up and the window in which it needs to operate. I remember the McLaren in 09 was, it was just a dog. You couldn't wring any sort of lap time out of it until they updated it. And then all of a sudden the car transformed. I think this Mercedes has potential, obviously with the no pods concept, but just the way Formula One is at the moment, it's very fast in terms of the amount of races. So if you're behind, you don't actually get that much time to necessarily go through the data, and there's all the budget caps, and there's so many things that are just working against Mercedes at the moment, which some may say is unfair, but that's just the way it is. And Mercedes will accept that and they'll move forward. And I'm sure they will sort this car out to a point where it is somewhat competitive and it will become a baseline for next year. And if they come out with something amazing next year, we can look back at now and go, well, look how much they learned.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Roy?
Yeah, look, it's, you know, too early to say that it's too early to hit panic stations or panic buttons and all that sort of thing. You know, you look through the history of the sport and the great teams who have, you know, dominant eras and have had sustained periods of success for a long time. There is eventually an end to that as well. Not saying that this will be the end for Mercedes and whatnot. Sometimes other teams just do a better job. You know, we didn't say that about Red Bull back in 2013, for example, when they won their fourth consecutive Constructors' Championship, and then, you know, Ferrari in the early 2000s, etc. But yeah, it's too early to say whether it is, you know, a disaster. Like, it certainly looks like that at the moment with the results they've got. I mean, it was pretty uninteresting watching Hamilton repeatedly being shown on the broadcast today, being stuck behind Gasly, being unable to pass him. I think, you know, it would have been more interesting to watch, you know, Albon, for example, trying to get in the points or whatever. But yeah, you know, I think a team as good as Mercedes, who've had such great success, and their culture is so used to winning that, you know, it seems like it's, you know, a situation where everyone's panicking because they're not used to this, where they haven't gone this long without a win or, you know, being on pole and podiums and all that sort of thing. So I think it's going to be a real character building kind of, you know, few races, or if it's for the whole year, let it be for the whole year, character building year, where they have to now show us how great they are, even on the days where they are not in the position to fight for the world championship and whatnot. You know, there's no reason making these dramatic, you know, radio messages or, you know, oh, you know, we're not in the championship. Just, you know, get on with it, you know. And I'm sure behind the scenes they are doing that sort of thing. But yeah, you know, if it's not going to be their year, that's fine. Let's do better next year. And also let this build us as a team, because, you know, ever since Toto Wolff came to the team, for example, back in 2013, they've won races. You know, then they went into the 2014, the hybrid era, and they've won all the championships since. So they've not really had a time, unless you look back to, you know, 2010, when, you know, they first became the Mercedes Works team, where they've had really, really bad times, you know. And I'm sure that a lot of the, like, the key personnel in the team are different to what it was back then, but perhaps, you know, people at the factory and whatnot are the same. But yeah, you know, I think it's a bit of an overreaction to you know, talk this much about Mercedes, of course, because they're the champions and whatnot. Lewis Hamilton, 7-time world champion, that, you know, everyone's so used to seeing him at the front and winning. It's a bit refreshing not having to, you know, talk about them every weekend as having won and whatnot. But also, I'm sure they're going to pull through at some point, whether it's this year with some upgrades, as we've said, Barcelona, everyone's got a lot of big upgrade packages coming, or if they decide to cut their losses and say, let's focus on 2023. You know, there's not much they can do on the power unit side, obviously, with those power units frozen until the next rules cycle, but they definitely can do a lot of work on their chassis. And, you know, with James Allison there still as well, I have no doubt that they can turn things around.
How about you, Tom?
I don't really have an awful lot to add, to be honest. Everything that Aaron and Jared have already said sort of just echoes what I was going to say, or what I'm thinking. You know, before races in, yeah, the Mercedes is not a very good car. I think you lads hit the nail on the head when you said Mercedes are not used to not winning. Or they are, excuse the double negative, let me rephrase, they are used to winning. So they don't know how to be when they're not winning. You'd have thought they'd have had some experience of that with Bottas, but evidently not. I had to get with it. But yeah, there's very much a sort of changing of the guard going on in F1. They'll probably get the car to a point where it's reasonable, but they'll be wary of the cost cap. And if they get to, say, I'd say over half or coming close to 2/3 of the way into the season, and they realise, oh, this car's really not going anywhere, then by that point, I'd imagine that they'll just say, do you know what, stuff it, we're just going to focus resources on next year. Because, you know, if they get to a point where it's just hypothetically, say they get to a point where it's, well, we're not going to catch, I don't know, McLaren in P3 in the constructors, but we're not going to lose position to, say, Haas in P5, just as an example. There's not an awful lot of point for them focusing resources onto something where they're not going to get that money back through additional positions in the championship and therefore prize money. So they're also going to have a cutoff point. They're going to be thinking about next year. We know this. But they're also going to be they're also going to be looking at what the fundamental issues are with the car. They're going to be looking at what Ferrari are doing, what Red Bull are doing. They're going to be looking at, I don't know, even what Haas are doing. They're going to be looking at what everybody's doing, and they're going to be, you know, Mercedes will make it work, okay? Look, F1 has some of the brightest engineering minds around, some of the absolute pinnacles of engineering and sort of like just knowledge and experience, all the rest of it. There's a reason it's the top. Mercedes are going to be all right. They will. It's not a great year for them. It's a pretty woeful year. But if you look at the standards that they've set for themselves since 2013, this is the first time in almost 10 years that they've gone, oh, heck, we need to do something. So if any Mercedes fans out there thinking, oh, you're sort of ringing the bell saying this is the end, it's not the end. Far from it. It's a blip. And Mercedes will learn from this. They'll gather some experience, all the rest of it. It's a learning curve for them. Yes, it hurts. How do you think I feel being a Red Bull fan? You know, especially from like 2014 on through to last season, basically. I feel your pain. It's not nice. I know. Trust me. But Mercedes will sort it. Whether it's going to be this season, whether it'll be next season, that'll be all right. They just will. It's what Mercedes do. As for Hamilton, he's not going anywhere this season. His contract runs out end of next year. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him come into next year, see what the car's like. If it turns out it's a dog again, then he might call it a day. Phil, you said earlier about some drivers who are champions then sort of almost fade into obscurity. I mouthed to myself, yeah. Vettel.
Vettel.
Because I'm sure that's who we were all thinking of when you said that. And it's almost sad to see how that's happened. And as big a Max fan as I am, I don't want that to happen to anyone. I don't want that to happen to anyone. And I really don't want it to happen to Hamilton. And I genuinely mean this. I really do mean this. I don't want it to happen to Hamilton. And I'll tell you for why. That sounded really Welsh. He is an icon of the sport. He's an icon of F1. He has set and broken more records than I've had hot dinners or whatever. And I've had a lot of hot dinners. He's got 7 world championships. He won, 2014, 2015, and then 2017 through to 2020, right? What a feat. He got more pole positions with Mercedes than Schumacher did in his entire career. He's got over 100 race wins. He's won more or less one out of every 3 races he's ever entered. He started in F1 when I started in comprehensive school. I think that's middle school for you, Phil. So I was 13. I was 12 going on 13 when he entered F1, because he entered in 2007. And I was in the middle of my first year of comprehensive school. I'm now 27 going on 28, and he is still in F1. And it's not like he's faded into obscurity. Hamilton deserves to retire on his terms. And I just hope that when the day does come, because it is going to come at some point, I just hope that he can go out on that it's his decision and that it doesn't have an asterisk next to it where people are saying, oh, you retire because the car's rubbish or whatever. So it's going to be his decision. And I just hope that when he retires, that's how it goes.
I figure that's what it'll be. I mean, Vettel, there's Ross, KK Rosberg. I mean, there's a few people that were out there. I mean, I would think Nelson Piquet, but he won. And his next last year of his career, I think he even won in 91 as well before he left. So it wasn't like he was obscure. Nigel came back in 94 and filled in and won races, but then he couldn't fit in the McLaren. There's other people that came back, went back and forth. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a question when you see a performance like that. It's just out there. Figured we'd go and discuss it. I know it's early. Mercedes will come back. How far back that is? They're third in all of this too. Let's be honest about it. They're third in the constructors, and they got, you know, they got 31 points on McLaren. So there is that, even with a car that's an absolute dog. So, and George Russell's making the most out of it. So it's something that we will see. The guy who's battling was Pierre Gasly. So, Aaron, I'll throw to you. We mentioned it during the Yuki Tsunoda part where, you know, Yuki basically swapped roles with him this weekend. It was not a great weekend for him, especially when you consider a lot of the talk that's going on with Pierre Gasly in regards to his career and his future. But I think, you know, when you're coming with those teams that are in that midfield, you expect them to have good days and bad days. I guess this was just a bad weekend for Pierre Gasly.
Yeah, it was a bit of an anonymous weekend, really, and he was thoroughly outperformed by his teammate. They both fell out of Q1, which wasn't really altogether surprising. But what was surprising was the progress that Tsunoda made in the sprint and that the Gasly did not make, either in the sprint or in the Grand Prix today. He did, well, I say a good job. He stopped Hamilton getting past him by making sure he constantly had DRS off of Albon, but he wasn't fast enough to pass Albon. So the pair of them were just stuck. There's not really a lot else I can say about Gasly, because apart from getting in the way of Hamilton, he was just, there was never really ever a threat from him in terms of points or anything. It was a bit of a dull weekend for Pierre, really, because the AlphaTauri is just, the performance isn't there, strangely enough, because it's they take a lot of parts from Red Bull, not as many as Haas do from Ferrari, but they take enough. So you would assume logically that if the Red Bull is good, that the AlphaTauri will be strong too, but it just hasn't worked out that way this year. And it was just one of those weekends for Pierre where, you know, you're driving a midfield car and you don't get the best out of it.
That's sometimes it happens, and it's been the other way around. But in this case, Pierre Gasly just had a throwaway. Maybe he'll be able to party in Miami with Lewis and a few other people and have a few drinks, and he'll get a little looser and he'll feel better about the world. One team that's really going to want to forget about this weekend, Jouad, is the Alpine team. So we'll talk about both of them. Esteban Ocon finishes 14th. Fred Alonso, one of the two retirements, and it was on lap 6. Fred, who they played his video from 2005 on the F1, on the F1 channels, talking about his great performance holding off M. Schumacher in the Renault back then. This year, not so much for Fernando Alonso. He really didn't have anything to show for his weekend here. And a throwaway weekend after a couple of solid, stronger weekends in the past two races. So unfortunate as they're battling in the midfield, of course, to kind of stay in contention, to get a double non-point score and not really be a factor at all with both either driver, both with Ocon and Alonso.
Yeah, we're talking about Michael Schumacher fighting with Fernando Alonso back in 2005. It was actually his son, Mick Schumacher, who was the reason for Alonso's eventual terminal damage on the Alpine. I think when Schumacher spun early on, he kind of clipped the side pod of the Alpine, and then we saw when he was coming down the straight wheel-to-wheel with Lewis Hamilton that it just flew off. So, and then there was talk that they could possibly get it repaired and get him back out. Whole lot of good that would have done anyway. But yeah, three races now for Alonso where he has either not finished or not scored any points. Considering the potential of that car that we've seen, Ocon in this one, you know, he was running as high as 11th and then had that unsafe release in the pits, which copped him a 5-second penalty, which got added to his time at the end of the race. And yeah, ended up finishing down in what, 14th or 15th it was. And unfortunate for Ocon because it's ruined a run of points finishes he's had going back to Sao Paulo last year. So he's been pretty consistent, has Esteban, but yeah, it's been a throwaway weekend, like you say, Phil, for Alpine this weekend. And crucial again when we're talking about that Constructors' Championship battle, because you know, it's good points that they potentially threw away. But we know that the car's got pace. They just need to hook it up, you know, make sure they qualify in the top 10 and just have a clean race and, you know, just move it on to the next one. And hopefully things go more to plan rather than it being Alpine again for Alpine.
LP, yeah, that's a good one there. In regards to that, yeah, I figure they'll be able to recover power unit situation otherwise and with other things. Fred is 18 points behind his teammate right now, only has scored 2 points so far this year. So the talk about what is Fernando Alonso going to do, he did say a couple of years ago it was about 2022. Well, if the plan was 2022 is supposed to be his year, that plan ain't working out so good there, Fred. We'll go with the guy that Paul DiResta insisted on butchering his name all weekend. Zhou Guan Yu, there, Tom, unfortunate weekend, had accidents. He wasn't in the best pace, but he's a rookie, so you kind of have to throw it away in that sense. It looks worse in the sense that his veteran teammate got fifth, but you know, learning curve there for him. Unfortunate weekend for Zhou Guan Yu, but he has shown earlier this year that he has the pace and the ability, and he could help his veteran teammate as he goes along, but not this weekend.
Yeah, this is the first time that I think we saw Zhou Guan Yu where he actually looked like a rookie, because his first two or three weekends were pretty solid, if unspectacular, but that's what you'd want from a rookie. When the cats just walked in. The crash with Dazzly in the sprint, that reeked of inexperience to me. That was a very rookie error, as the saying goes. He'll learn from it. He'll learn about tracks. Your way where you give space. You know, Alonso always likes to leave the space, as we know. So it's something that he'll pick up on. Yeah, a bit disappointing from this weekend. Sorry, come here. Trying being a cat dad. Disappointing in that sense. He had an all right qualifying on Friday. Again, it's something that he'll pick up on. He's got a good car underneath him, so it's not like he's driving around in a Haas. If he doesn't score any points sort of like for the rest of the season, I think then questions may need to be asked. But we're only four races in, or five, or how many races? We're four races in? Yeah, four races in. So he's doing all right. Didn't have a brilliant day today. He overtook the Tifi. Guan Yu started from the pit lane. He overtook the CV, but that's like saying, well, then you woke up and remembered to breathe. Take from that what you will. He wasn't too far off Ocon. It turns into a bit of a race of attrition for him. Like you said, Phil, he's young, he's a rookie, it's his fourth season, and the jump from F2 to F1 is enormous. We'll give him a bit of credit. He showed good signs so far. We'll give him that, because I was very skeptical of him coming in, but no. He's doing okay so far. Solid, but not spectacular, which is, I think, what they want.
And trying to generally keep it clean, which unfortunately wasn't able to yesterday, but keep it clean, bring it home, get the data, get the time in the seat. That's really what they're looking for. The last person we're going to talk, we have two more actually. Daniel Ricciardo, Aaron, first lap incident, took him out, and then his teammate. This is yet another example. This is something that happened last year too, where Daniel Ricciardo would have early incidents in the race, get involved and be left in the back while his teammate goes and does really well. This is yet another example of that for Daniel Ricciardo, gets involved in the whole Carlos Sainz situation, and that basically ruins his day. That was the end of it. Once he gets one little thing happens to Daniel Ricciardo, he goes straight to the back. And that's where he was today. 18th place while his teammate finished third. So not a good look for old Danny Rick.
No, on paper, it doesn't look very good, does it? And then you see that he's the guy who's knocked Carlos Sainz out of the race. Probably have the Tifosi chasing him all the way back to Woking with pitchforks. But I'm sure he'll be all right. It was a bit of a silly mistake. Just a little bit of a slide off the curb, and then it's just one of those things. It wasn't really his fault, because in wet conditions, you can sometimes get away with putting the wheel on the curb. But today he didn't, and Carlos Sainz paid the price, and it did wreck Daniel's race, to be honest. But if you look at where Lando put the McLaren and the form that Ricciardo had in the sprint, where he was pretty much untroubled, to be honest, I have no doubt in saying that had that incident not happened, then you're probably looking at a fifth and sixth for McLaren. And that's assuming that Leclerc doesn't make that mistake that he made at Variante Alta. So from there, you'd have to say that he's relatively on par with Lando, having followed him home in Australia and in the sprint. And it's just one small mistake that's kind of ruined his race. And he wasn't alone in the fact that he couldn't make progress from the back. You know, we've spoken about Hamilton, we've spoken about others' drivers. The whole DRS situation was a bit crazy, to be honest. But even that, I don't think would have rescued his weekend or his race from there, because he was just too far back. And it's just so tricky to overtake it, Imola.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate byproduct of the track. It's part of why they didn't race there for many years. Pandemic has brought this track back in, but it's the same track that it was prior to them not being on the calendar. The only difference now is that they have DRS. Otherwise, and they took out a chicane before they get to the front straightaway. Basically the same track, and they couldn't overtake back in the day. Still can't overtake now. So it is what it is with that. Unfortunately, it's not the greatest track. Good history, but it's not a great track for theoretical racing or passing. Of course, the last person we'll talk about, Jawad, is Carlos Sainz. On the weekend that he gets his extension, a la Esteban Ocon last year, getting an extension after a brutal Australian Grand Prix, a brutal Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, albeit at the expense of Daniel Ricciardo, crashed in qualifying, made it back to be in the top five at the start after the sprint recovery, but then nothing to show for it this weekend. 2 weeks in a row where Carlos Sainz has not shown the poise that has been a part of what his career has been. He's generally been more controlled, more poised, not akin to make those kind of mistakes. But these last couple of rounds have not been in his favor in that sense. And we have to, and when you consider your teammate's world championship leader, and he also made mistakes, brutal sort of weekend for Ferrari on the takeaway relative to their big rivals.
Yeah, well, hopefully it doesn't mean that his season has already started to unravel. Like you say, Sainz is someone who everyone knows for his poise and very, you know, minimal in making mistakes throughout his career. He's super consistent in his early days at Toro Rosso and then at Renault and McLaren. You know, I mean, that's the one thing, you know, one thing as a McLaren fan I miss so much is having Carlos Sainz in the team, and, you know, was super envious when he got picked up by Ferrari. But like you mentioned, Esteban Ocon getting the contract extension last year and then having a horrible run of form, hopefully it also means that a win is around the corner for Carlos. And I know we've all predicted at some point this season, whether it was in Australia or this weekend, that we might see him finally break through for that win. It's just, you know, wrong place at the wrong time, which has been unfortunate. And in this instance, especially, you know, it was deemed a racing incident, whatever. Ricciardo goes in to apologize to Sainz after the race. I mean, no amount of apologies going to, you know, make it any better. You know, it would, should have been his weekend to get a solid result, bounce back from the disaster that Australia was for him. But, you know, what's this going to do for his confidence? We've not really seen Sainz in a position like this before, where his results on the track has meant that he's, you know, had no points for the last two races. He hasn't even gone beyond the first lap, let alone in the last two races. So how does he bounce back there for Miami? And just psychologically too, because a lot of chat around that, you know, he's going to be the number two. He's, you know, the Rubens to Michael and the Valtteri to Lewis or whatever. And yet, you know, I feel it's too early to already be putting him into that number two role. I mean, Sainz, we know him as this consistent driver who will score the points. There'll be the Constructors' Championship, which, you know, he helped McLaren with, you know, a couple of years ago. He helped Ferrari with last year as well to beat his old team McLaren to third in the championship. So, yeah, I feel like it's too early to do that. But then at the same time, these non-race finishing results are really hurting that image. So I just hope that, yeah, Miami is a much smoother weekend, even if it is just, you know, finishing the race, finishing top five or whatever, or if he gets on the podium, great. But, yeah, just something to get his confidence back up, because we don't want him to just spiral and then, you know, for it to be a disaster for the rest of the year, and then suddenly we end up putting him in that position that Bottas found himself in, unfortunately, for the remainder of his Mercedes career.
Yeah, it's part of, I guess, the greater discussion that we've had today among certain drivers, where, yeah, it's been a couple of races, it's very early, you know, 23 race calendar, biggest ever. A lot of time to recover, but there's also a lot of time for it to go really far down into the depths of despair. We have to see where this goes. We have 2 weeks before Miami, and then after that, a further 2 weeks to Catalunya, and a back-to-back with, of course, the Great Monaco Grand Prix. So this month of May coming up, I mean, of course, it's big here with Indianapolis, and in motorsports in general, but in Formula One, there's three races in the month of May, and they're going to be key, I think, in regards to a lot of drivers and a lot of teams and what they have to look at. I mean, Ferrari and Red Bull are set for the most part, but Carlos Sainz has to be there with Charles Leclerc so that they can get this constructors, because now they've made up a ton of points here this weekend, Red Bull, and they've cut that gap down a single digit. So that's something that we will be keeping track of here on the Grid Talk podcast. So it's that time. Give the gentlemen their time to go and promote their stuff, and I'll promote myself at the end after everybody else goes. So, Tom, let us know where we can find you and your content.
Yeah, so I'm part of the Everything F1 team. You can find us across all your favorite social media platforms with the handle at JoinEF1. We have Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. Apparently, that's a thing. Not that you'll ever find me on there. Twitter, again, not that you'll ever find me on there because I don't have an account. Yes, and then our website is everythingf1.com, where we do race reviews. I'm starting a series of somewhat unpopular opinions, should we say, because I think it's fair to say I have a couple. Not that anybody's noticed. And finally, last but by no means least, we have our podcast, the Everything F1 podcast. It's a nice midweek podcast. We have all sorts of guests on. So coming up in a few weeks, we have Sabre Cook from the W Series coming on. We had Callum Ilott on the other week. We've had team principals. We've had some journalists. We've had Lawrence Barretta on before. We've had Ed Storer on a few times from the race. Yes. So go check that out. It's on, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Cast, Omni Studio, Amazon, our websites, anywhere, basically.
Um, Aaron, where can we go and find you and your work?
So I make the Five Red Lights F1 podcast, which you can find on YouTube and on any good podcast platform. I have a website, which is fiveredlights.wixsite.com/5RLpodblog, where you can find my predictions ahead of the weekends and a few pieces that I write on just how I feel about Formula One. And I've also just started writing for F1 Chronicle. So you can check out my race report from today. And I've been covering the whole weekend for the website. So you check out my articles there.
Yep, F1 Chronicle. And probably you could get on George's site, sportlightpro.com as well. So cheap plug, since I'm theoretically George on this episode, written on there. So great websites. Great content. Want to go and catch Tom. I mean, Tom, of course, he's quite humble in his great opinions. They are quite interesting and great, and they kind of remind me of me. So it would be interesting if the two of us actually did a show, how spicy it would get. Aaron, of course, I basically was looking at your Twitter deal this weekend to keep up with information. He's always on top of it. And so another great source, plenty of great sources here, including Jawad, who brings the Aussie perspective too. So we get that. Where can we go and find your stuff, buddy?
I've got the Hit the Apex podcast, which I do race reviews mostly and talk about other motorsports, chiefly supercars here in Australia as well. You can find our Twitter account at Hit the Apex Media, but also there's a link tree which will take you through to my Instagram, to my writing profile on theraw.com.au for whom I was accredited for the Australian Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago. So that was a great experience too. And that's about it.
Yeah, having that opportunity to go to the race and actually be there and have those be in with the other writers, be in that media room, that's a feeling that I'll always remember. I still have all my press lanyards over there. I haven't hung them up since we redid our room over here, but we will be doing that shortly. It'll probably end up here or here, one of those places, in the next few episodes. You can find me on the Grip Strip podcast. We're on anywhere you can basically find podcasts. Apple. I can go and bring it up. I should bring it up. The professional one would bring it up, but I'm not professional, as you can tell, the way I've done this today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Podbean, Pandora. You can find my website at philipgmatthew.com. Josh Huffine and I, at JP Huffine on Twitter, USailor2 on Twitch. He does iRacing streams. He runs IndyCar, NASCAR, stuff like that. So we talk about all things motorsports. We talk about Formula One a lot, of course, F2, F3, any type of motorsport, really. As long as it goes fast, we generally talk about it on the Grip Strip podcast. So hope that you can go and listen to us too. Plenty of great takes. I was quite subdued today for multiple reasons. But if you really want to hear the real me, you want to hear me when I'm a guest on the show, on this show, or on the Grip Strip podcast. So with that, we thank you for the people that did listen. We're on the YouTube live stream. We thank you for listening to that. I have to do this here. Grid Talk is available on YouTube. Most episodes are recorded live, like right now, as well as Amazon, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Omni Studio, and Pocket Cast. You just have to search Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalog of shows, now 190 shows, with previews and reactions to qualifying and race results. Please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. And you can get your hands on some official Grid Talk merchandise on f1chronicle.com/store. George usually is wearing the kit. So if you want to go and see that, definitely, or wear that, wear the t-shirts, hoodies, you can go and get them over there. Also, make sure to subscribe so you're the first to know when each new episode is out. That's whether it's on the podcast side or on the YouTube side. And they're always great to listen to. You get lots of information and get lots of great takes. We'll be back next week with the preview for episode 191 of the Grid Talk podcast to preview the Miami Grand Prix. For that, for the guys, thank you all for contributing and helping me out today on having to go and sub in for the great Ruby. Thank you all. And thanks to everybody for listening to the Grid Talk podcast. We will see you next time for the preview of the Miami Grand Prix. Goodbye.